Guard Your Grill Boxing, Berto Flack, Coltrane. We got another big fight on our hands. This is, we've been saying it practically the whole year, man. This has been one of the best years in boxing. There's a concern, just the fights we've been asking for, man. And now, granted, we didn't ask for this particular fight. We were kind of given it, or we were given the fight, so to speak, out of nowhere. But we are going to see, I want to say, a fight that should have happened maybe some time ago, but we're getting it now. Canelo Alvarez against Jermell Charlo, as what they're painting as undisputed versus undisputed. You know, we'll talk, you know, talk about that real quick, at the end of the show. But lots to discuss, man. I mean, we're at the end of the year. There's still fights on the horizon. I mean, there's some, I'll go through real quick some of the fights that are, I think, going to be announced pretty soon. We were talking, Boo Boo and David Benavidez seemingly have this, like, Friday after Thanksgiving date as what we're making this recording right now. It's not solidified. Real quick, your take on that fight. Two guys that have been gunning for Canelo now fighting each other.
Yeah, it's interesting that all the pieces are starting to come together. You know, you do wonder and question is like, is it too late, too soon? I mean, too little, too late. But it's a fight that, you know, you got to give Benavidez his props because, look, Boo's not an easy guy to look good against. You know, former, like you said, former junior middleweight. It's funny because all these guys was once upon a time at 154. You know, the Charlo twins, Canelo, J-Rock, Boo Boo, you know, they was all Jerry Hurd. Remember at one time that was...
Yeah, right.
Not big, you know, so... But here we are, you know, he's moved up. You know, he's fighting that super middleweight now, obviously. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, was his last fight at super middleweight? Was at middleweight?
Yeah. Super middleweight, okay. Yeah.
So, all right, so Boo Boo's he's a full-fledged super middleweight now. He's not a little dude, you know, always had nice size on him and, you know, a tricky, slick style. Like I said, not the easiest guy to look good against. And look, for Benavidez, this is the second slick fighter that he's fought back-to-back. So you got to give him props on that. So that goes to show you that they're not playing around with, you know, moving him along and, you know, getting him ready for you-know-who. But... Yeah, that's what remains to be seen if that fight ever will materialize. But I like it. You know, it's a weird day of the week that is on. You know, Good Friday. I mean, a Black Friday. The day after Thanksgiving here in the States is a big shopping day, big college football day. A lot of the positioning going on for bowl games, you know, start to happen at the end of the year. So it's like, you know, it's an interesting day, you know. But I'm, of course, you know, we're going to watch it. But look, this is the year, man. Like, we just continue to get these big fights. And, you know, I'm not complaining about it. I'm going to take it. You know, and you, to your point, Roberto, September 30th, is the gateway to a lot of stuff, including that fight.
Right. A gateway to potentially, you know, what 2024 could present us, man.
That's a big... Canelo and Jermell Charlo is a huge, huge fight for other fights. You know, right. It's connected to so much.
We always talk about the ripple in the pond, and it's interesting how this one fight, you brought it up, how this one fight is really like the ripple in the pond for like all these other divisions.
And, only on 135.
Right.
Because think about it, like, one of the things that, look, you can never say never in boxing. You don't know what could happen because, you know, at one time they was talking about Gervonta potentially fighting. But, you know, not that that's going to happen, but the fact that it's a conversation, that's a division way that way, you know? So it's like,
yeah,
it's Legos, all these parts connecting to one another.
Right. No, that's a good point, man. I seldom remember a time in boxing where we've seen that, that separation in divisions, there's these little moving pieces that could potentially happen, but It's I think with this fight with Canelo and Jermell, and we'll talk about it, like, obviously, yeah, the breakdown of it, but I think there's a story to be told there. As what I've been saying for some time, man, is really just where this fight, I think, is going to tell us in some essence where Canelo is. Because I've been very adamant about just where I feel he's at in his career. And the narrative right now is, you know, he had a hand injury. That's why he hasn't looked the same. But, you know, we also look at the hood underneath, yeah, and what that motor's looking like, man. Right. It's hard to ignore that. But we'll touch on that in a second. But, like, another fight, too, you got announced. And, well, you know what? Before I get to the other fight that got announced, December 9th, Regis and Devin Haney. I'm looking forward to that. We did a show.
Okay.
Right? Talking about one particular fight that, since we did that show, is not happening. And I don't want to get too much into it because there's still pieces up to the story that we don't have fully solidified. But this Shakur Stevenson, Frank Martin fight that we were going to get,
right?
So, you know, apparently is not happening. We all know kind of the ins and outs of, like, what happened, so to speak, but we saw there's another fight on the horizon, or at least the I don't want to say a feeling, but I guess, like, the fight that now we're going to get is Shakur Stevenson and Edwin De Los Santos. But let me ask you, man, in this situation, like, where does Frank Martin go? I mean, like, you know, we're hearing rumors about some issues with management or promotions. I mean, I'm not going to jump into it yet, but
yeah.
How do you feel, or I should ask, like, what's the best course of action for Frank Martin right now in the case where, you know, you had a big fight in front of you and now it's just, you know, non-existent at this point?
Well, being as though these titles are going to be relinquished, right, from Devin Haney, all of them. I think the WBA, I think Gervonta's fighting for that when he fights Pitbull Cruz.
Yeah, if that happens, yeah, fight. Like, that's still another question mark, right?
Yeah. Well, that's what they're saying. Well, that's the one fight that, initially I thought Frank Martin would be an opponent for Gervonta. But it don't look like they're going that route. It looks like they're going to end the year with more of a sure shot with Pitbull Cruz. Not that Gervonta can't beat Frank Martin, but I think that fight is a fight that they want to kind of marinate for later.
Yeah.
You know? So anyway, to answer your question, I think that Frank, you know, probably needs to get himself in position to get a title. You know, first and foremost, fight for one of these vacant titles. You know, who would that be against? I have no idea. You know, somebody brought up Chris Colbert name to me. You remember they had some.
Yeah, he was being mentioned in the fight tank.
He was being mentioned there. I think that he's going to need a guy of that caliber to get one of these vacant titles, continue to put his name in position to be in position. And then kind of go from there. Like, he just some PR damage. Not that, you know, like you said, we don't really know all what took place. We only hear one side of a story from Shakur's side. And we never really heard from Frank Martin other than a tweet or a thread, whatever the hell they call it now.
Yeah, right.
Him basically saying, I didn't duck anybody, whatever. I forget, I'm paraphrasing, but. You know, I just think that it's some PR stuff that needs to be done. And look, man, these titles will be out here. These belts are all over the place now. And, you know, get yourself in position, you know, and then hit the reset button and try to get one of these fights later again. You know, maybe percentage-wise, he'll be able to get more than what he was looking for and then kind of go from there. So,
right.
You know, but I don't know, man. It's boxing. It doesn't surprise me. It's not like
it doesn't surprise before,
you know. But guys have backed out of fights before, so
yeah,
we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. That you know, I mean, as far as we know, Shakur has a fight on November 16th.
Technically, I think that that's a better fight for Shakur. I think that skill-wise, I think that he might be a little bit more of a complete fighter, you know, than Frank Martin. Even though he's younger, but just a little bit more polished, you know?
So, he's a bigger guy. Like,
he's a bigger guy. He's a punch. Look, to be a great fighter, you have to fight these type of guys. I know the fans wanted Frank Martin because he's the more known guy, but this guy here, De Los Santos, is a puncher-boxer. Which is not the easiest style to deal with. So, you know, Shakur has had a fight in the past where he fought an awkward guy, you know, didn't let his hands go as much, and you know, Shakur said it himself. So, you know, high as we all are on Shakur, and I think that we all collectively think he's going to beat De Los Santos, but at the same time, you got to fight these type guys to see,
right?
You know,
you can't say here's you're absolutely that. Right. So.
It's a good fight.
No, it is. It is, man. It'll be on ESPN. We haven't heard the official word, but you know, I'm sure we're gonna hear something like really soon.
Look, it's hold on real quick, but you and I got to the joke, right? And cause somebody was like, "Oh, look, it's across the street fight, you know, with PBC and Todd Rank." And I remember before I said, "Well, this is kind of like the concession stand guys, you know, doing this." Concession stand guys. And I'm not trying to take a shot at De La Santa, but this wasn't really that complicated of a fight to do because that guy probably would have took $50,000 to fight Shakur. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, this is not exactly a good example to use for sides of the street talk, you know. For this particular fight.
No, I agree.
He's a PBC fighter for those who don't know. And Shakur is the top rank. So I had to put that out there, like, you know.
before we get into the whole obviously the preview and breakdown of Canelo and Jermell. Right. It's funny, I'm looking at that poster behind you. One of the legendary fights. You know, that we still talk about today, man. Sugar Ray Leonard and Roberto Duran. And funny enough, when you mentioned those two names, a lot is mentioned more so of the rematch than of the first fight because of the cash that came out of it. And, you know, so to kind of segue into the new kind of, I guess it's the news that broke somewhat this week or earlier, or maybe a little bit of the week before, but we're hearing more of it now. You know, this whole rematch clause that is coming off of Terrence Crawford and Errol Spence. Errol Spence is exercising the rematch clause. And slowly but surely, Terrence Crawford comes out and says, well, you know, we're going to do this rematch. It has to be at 147. And which has people up in arms, like, you know, well, you know, why you said 154 and all this stuff. And now more is coming out of the contract. There's a concerns that if the participants are not agreeing, where at least in this case, Errol Spence does not agree to the weight, he has to put it in writing of such. Not sure what that really means at the end of the day, but you and I have collectively, with the inception of the talks of this rematch, you and I like look at the economics of things. A lot of the times when we kind of pinpoint certain fights make sense to happen, certain fights just don't, you know. And the one thing that stuck about this fight, man, was number one, how it culminated. And it did good business. But there's certain fights that deem it to do that much more business because it fits a certain criteria. Like we always mention, controversial decisions. It was a damn good fight, the first fight. And then collectively could have done good business. Which when you look at that fight behind you, and you know, for those of you just listening to the audio version of this show, you know, Train's got the legendary poster of Ray Leonard and Roberto Duran. One. That took place in Montreal. And that fight deemed for there to be a rematch because it fit two criterias. Economically, it did big at the box office, and it was a close fight. Even though Roberto Duran won, this wasn't like a whitewash fight. This was a close fight. 15-round fight. Skip how many years are we now, right? Here we are with Crawford and Spence with these rematch clauses that you and I have always heard over the years. But it was never the idea that we knew about them going into these fights. And or were they ever exercised when they didn't make sense? And here we are. So let me get your take, man. This whole rematch clause or this whole fight, where do you see this legitimately taking place? At like what time frame? And do you think it makes sense ultimately for this rematch to happen?
Well, first and foremost, it's definitely not taking place this year. You just gave me a date. Was it December 9th for
December 9th, yeah.
Haney and Regis Progress. And, you know, not that one has anything to do with the other, but dates are important when you're putting dates together. You know, you don't want to overlap stuff, right? You want that to be a standalone situation. You just sent me a picture of Crawford. I just posted it. He actually put the Crawford was the poster. So I don't know where these reports come from. I don't know who's leaking them. What are people doing? And look, shout out to other boxing publications out there. Now, you know, people doing with it the best that they can. But you got to be careful of, you know, just reposting or retweeting or recording, whatever read you want to put out there of information that's just kind of hanging out there, you know, because if you use your eyes and see Bud Crawford in the way he looks, do this look like a guy that's fighting at welterweight anytime soon again? You know, judging the way he looks? Or this is more like a guy bulking up to do something unique. Right. I mean, like, not that he's probably can't, I'm not saying he can't fight at welterweight, but Bud has, and maybe it was always there, and maybe he was handicapped when he was with Top Rank to do a lot of the stuff that he's doing now. You know, and even myself, I'll be the first to admit, I question a lot of stuff that he was doing, but the guy is very strategic, and he's a strategist. You know, he's a, with the way he's putting everything together, leaking out information that he knows that's going to go out there and people going to run with it, playing mind games with the Spence camp and the fans out there, you know. And then 2 days later, he'll put up a post like, I'm around 160. What did he say? I'm around 160.
Around 180.
80, I'm my bad. He said I'm around 180. You know, like, letting you know, like, I'm getting close. So when I hear people say he's going to fight Spence at welterweight, yeah, he may have said that. But that's like a kind of a low-key way of saying, like, well, we'll put that out there just to put it out there. We? Bud know that Smith's not even he's not even a welterweight no more. He's listed on BoxRec as a junior middleweight. He's not even a welterweight no more. So that's not even like a realistic conversation. I just think that Bud is playing mind games with everybody. But you and I both know what his goal, look, Bud, look, he's a straight shooter. He was very adamant about what his goal was. He said, I want to be undisputed again. That's the goal. He'll honor the rematch, you know, if it do come to that. But like I've been saying from the rip, just because a fighter exercises a rematch, don't believe it happens. That don't mean it has, that it's going to happen. Let me, one other fact, and I'll give it back to you. There was a part of the clause where Spence, I think, was supposed to put something in about the weight. It was a deadline or what have you. He never did. He never exercised that. He never exercised it. So it's like, well, that's not to say that he doesn't want to fight Crawford. I think he do want to redeem his loss, but I just think that the fight right now don't make sense with a C. I just don't think it makes sense right now.
That's the perfect way to describe this. Yeah. It doesn't make sense on 2K, yeah, with that, with the C and in the sense of how it culminated. You know, all right, let me ask you this. How many rematches, immediate rematches, have you seen where the first fight was a complete domination? We did get Wilder Fury 3, right?
Wilder Fury, it was another one, too, because you really got to go back to the 90s, early 2000s, when you had these great matchups. We really didn't have a lot of this magnitude. So
right.
I thought about Mosley and Forrest, right? And it's funny because I remember listening to the telecast. They tried to get, not once, but twice, tried to get Shane out to take the fight with Vernon, even the first one. But they didn't want him taking the rematch.
Yeah.
Now it wasn't on a level with this, but that was the only fight I can remember of high level that somebody got dominated and wanted to do the rematch right away.
Yeah. I think, and I put this in the comments.
That wasn't really a domination because Jermaine Teller just got caught.
He dropped. I put this in the comments section on like the post this week, man. But I think really the elephant in the room is nobody's looking at Showtime or what Al Heyman has to say or what Steven Espinosa has already kind of like hinted. Like, listen, this fight did 650,000 buys on pay-per-view. It did 20 million at the gate.
Yes.
Those are solid numbers.
Yeah.
But you got to remember, okay, the fight did culminate in one guy being dominated, stopped, beat up, whatever you want to call it. And now you, as Showtime, as TGB Promotions, Al Heyman, you guys have to sell, not us, not even the hardcore Terrence Crawford fans.
Right.
They're going to watch anyway. You're really selling to the general mass audience that were the big pay-per-view buyers and the big ticket buyers. Now you got to sell them on the notion like, hey, remember that first fight we sold you on? We're doing it again. Remember how it ended? We're doing it again. And guess what? We're going to sell it for the same price. We're going to sell it for the same pay-per-view. And, you know, come on in, man. Like, you know, maybe we'll have a different outing. And oh, by the way, you got to pay Crawford and Spence. You know, somebody's got to pay them.
Remember we said that, though, about that? About the purses, like, if they're not going to be able to pay them what they paid them going into this fight.
Ah, man. And that's how I think people are really losing sight of. Both Crawford and Spence walked away with 25, give or take, $25 million from a fight that did 650K on pay-per-view. And they, again, they upsold the tickets to, like, you know, premium prices.
Yeah.
You can't, based on how the fight played out, that you can't resell that for the same price. Like, word of Fat Joe, like, yesterday's price ain't today's price, but, like, into flipping the opposite way. Like, you can't sell this for the same price tag because the demand just isn't there anymore. Not from a general, you know, sense. And it's why, you know, to your point, you got to look between the lines, man, and sometimes just look through the cryptic messages. And there's a reason why Terrence Crawford's on Instagram going like this, showing him like looking, and he's putting up these tweets, he's 180 pounds or whatever. It's giving you foresight of what ultimately, what he wants. So I'm on the boat right now and saying that I feel whatever narrative they're going to say, I just feel this fight is not going to happen, man. And I could be wrong. Maybe they work it out. It's at 150-something catch, whatever. I just think it's a tough sell.
Yeah, I think that. Oh, you know what I thought about Tyson Holyfield, too? Tyson Holyfield.
Even the Tyson Holyfield, the first fight was, I mean, it wasn't like Holyfield started taking over, but like even right. like.
It was.
It was like, yeah, like you could say, like, it was an exciting fight. And I'll say this with Crawford Spence 1. Even if Crawford was winning the rounds. But it was exciting to the point where Crawford was like still getting hit with stuff. But man, it's like it was really more of a showcase than it was a fight.
And that's, but remember you and I talked about if it almost felt like there was no contingency plan. From all the parties involved, from the other side, not Bud's side, but like, you know, like Espinosa, Chilton, PB's, the whole nine. It was almost like, well, we got every scenario drawn out, you know, in case this happened. But the one thing we didn't factor in was that a lopsided fight, you know, from Crawford or Spence, you know, well, Crawford giving Spence a lopsided. Crawford's in. I think it would have been easier if it was the other way from their perspective. Because had Spence did what Crawford did, it's like, all right, well, look, we don't really need to see this again. We'll move on. And now we're talking about, and this is a perfect segue coming up, now we're talking about Spence moving on to fight Canelo, which this is a really key component. And Canelo's a key piece to all this because, remember, it was Spence originally that was supposed to be Crawford, and then I want to fight Canelo next.
Days before the fight. Yes. Days before the fight, they were mentioning, like, hey, man, you know, he could fight, you know, Canelo in a couple fights. And I was sitting here like, yo, he's about to fight Terrence Crawford. Like,
But it just goes to show you how, like how, you know, one dominant, like, that scenario happening with Bud dominating this fight changed the trajectory of everything. You know what I'm saying? Right. So now Bud is in a seat now where he like, all right, I can call all my own shots now. I don't have to chase you guys no more.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I just think that, like you, I'm on the same type time. Like, until I see this fight signed again, I don't believe that it's happening. I don't. And Espinosa don't believe it's happening. He came out his own mouth and was like, you know, it's the fight that we're looking. What did he say? Potentially
down the line, you know, we got to revisit it. But
it's, you know what I'm saying? Like,
people got to, hey, listen, if money fell out of trees like that and you know, we can make any fight we want and, you know, all these fighters can get paid all they want, like, it'd be a wonderful world, right? But the reality is it takes money to make these fights and the fact that it took, like, 4 years for this to culminate, and now you want to run it back months later without there being a demand, and then the fighters that want are gonna want to get paid no less than the same.
And listen, there's only other options now. For Spence, it's tricky. I don't know what's the plan, what direction they want to go in with him. You know, and you know, obviously, like I said, he's a competitor. He's going to want this rematch. But Bud, the problem is that it's just so much stuff has changed. Like, him wanting to fight Canelo, even Mel, because we still got to say Mel is a live dog in this. So if he wins, you know, he said, winner, no matter who it is, he wants to move up and be undisputed in that particular weight class. You know, and you can see him bulking up, bulking his body up, you know, getting ready for whatever, 54, 60, 68, wherever the hell he plan on going. But not 47 now. I looked at him. I said, he's not fighting at welterweight.
He's not. Yeah, I think honestly think Crawford's done at 147. I think he's done.
And if he stay down there, he knows the public backlash. Like, all right, you staying out here, but it's like Bruce Simmons then. You know what I'm saying? So it's like.
Right. And I think Crawford's, at, like we've talked about, man, He's at a stage right now where he really has to take advantage of his position. He doesn't have a long time. He's got maybe a year and a half or two. If he's going to be 36. He's going to be this month.
He got a chance, right, to do something that Sugar Ray Leonard is probably the only one that actually probably did what he's about to do, you know. Ray Robinson tried to fight a light heavyweight, you know, had to retire on his stool. You know, Duran and all of that, but they was like older. These were like kind of gimmicky fights on the way out the door. This is a legitimate title. Titles. Like, this just don't happen in modern day boxing.
Yeah, we talked about this offline where we brought up Roberto Duran, right?
Right.
We've seen Manny Pacquiao. We've seen all these Hobbs and classes. This is what's different. And if Crawford is able to do this, okay, this isn't like him segueing like slowly to 168. And right. Again, this is if he decides to do this. He is going from welterweight to super middleweight, which is three weight classes in one single bout. No fighter's ever done that.
No.
Not to my recollection. And then the fact that, like, and this is no shot to Roy, but, you know, when Roy went to heavyweight, he got that strap, but he didn't necessarily fight Klitschko or one of those guys.
Wasn't like Michael Moore when he moved up and was fighting all the top-tier guys when he moved up to heavyweight, you know.
Right. Terrence Crawford going up to super middleweight to fight the number one super middleweight in the world. Undisputed.
Yeah.
That's as big a jump as in my lifetime I've ever seen. And it historically,
I had a debate with somebody about this. What do you think is a bigger fight for Canelo, Benavidez or Bud?
See, again, it's not even a question.
Right.
It's Terrence Crawford.
Yeah, that's what I said. Like,
to be fair, like, and it's like, you know, we'll segue into Canelo and Mel, but. It's two different situations because,
No doubt.
And I guess we'll get into this fight. All right, let me say this. I'll answer that question after I talk about this fight, because then you'll get a better gauge of where I'm going as it concerns what maybe Mel can do against Canelo, or you know. But real quick, and I'll throw it over to you. I never thought. Or let me backtrack. We were going into this fight thinking Maul was going to be the opponent. You know, we were thinking, hey, you know, we're being fed this. And and as obviously what we're seeing now, where, you know, Maul is, he's with Roy. And it makes sense why Mel became the option. But it is kind of crazy what we're talking about with Crawford and moving up. And here we have Mel moving up two weight classes.
Yo, I just thought about something you just said. I forgot about that because that was the big thing that threw everything off. Because remember, originally we thought it would be Maul, Canelo, Mel, Crawford. That's how we thought this would go down. That threw everything off once Maul backed out and Mel jumped in.
Well, yeah. I think we're now Crawford became, I mean, it's really two things, man. I mean, we've seen Maul kind of like trying to get back on his feet and get, you know, what we're thinking is like, I guess, acclimated back to, you know, to fighting. You know, there's a rumor he may be on the undercard of this Benavidez Boo Boo fight, you know.
I can't hope for Benavidez, by the way.
right. Heavyweight benefit. So, I just think, yeah, man, it's. I think Benavidez just naturally that's a tough fight. But actually, you know, I'll get to him in a second. I think with Mel, the reason I'm not mad in one instance about this fight happening for him at least is because of the fact that. He did what he did at junior middleweight. You know what I mean? He became undisputed.
Yeah.
He took a loss, but like he never made that as like a detriment to his career, you know, like where I wish more fighters were like that. Yeah. And look, man, at this stage of the game, him and Canelo and Maul, they're all the same age. You know, they kind of came weird. Up to get remember, they were all with Golden Boy at one point.
Yeah, it's weird how they did all the same age.
And technically. I just think, yeah. Mel, for whatever it's worth, man, it's, yeah, you know, he's somebody coming off a hand injury.
Yeah.
He's had a little bit of a layoff. But look, the name of this game sometimes, man, is you take the opportunities when they're presented to you. And that's why even Tim Tszyu was.
You hear that, Tim Tszyu?
Yo, Tim Tszyu even said, he goes, yo, yeah, man, no, like.
He walked it back.
Said,
well, definitely.
He said, yeah, he's like, bro, back. He's fighting Canelo Alvarez. What am I supposed to say? Like, so I think for Mel, does he have his work cut out for him? Of course, man. Like, listen, it is what it is. It's interesting. We've been seeing one particular person in his corner who we came up seeing, like, you know, maybe like almost 15 years ago, man, a fighter that really, you know, there's certain guys through history that it was kind of what if, right? Joe Guzman, you know, is in his corner, and you're getting a little bit of a gauge of what I think their MO is going to be for this fight. And it looks as if he's going to be on the move. Now, we've seen fighters try to do that for a lengthy period of time, and it can be taxing, man. To do that for 12 rounds, man, you got to really be in solid condition. But what do you think, or let me ask you, what do you think is Mel's best chance to win this fight? And or if you were going to guide him as far as a strategy, like what would be the case to beat Canelo moving up two weight classes?
Well, you brought up something interesting, which is age, because I think Canelo is technically the older fighter. Now, they're the same age. Actually, Canelo is 1 year younger. It's funny. He's 1 year younger than them, maybe by months, I forget, but he's technically younger, right? But he has a, like, you know, ROD always say, you know, that Honda Civic got a lot of miles on it. You know, it might be a newer car, but it got a lot of highway miles on it. And Canelo, he's been fighting since he was a kid. You know, remember, he came to, when we first learned about Canelo, he already had like 30 fights. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
you know, he was fighting guys that we don't know who he was fighting. But once he, you know, got put on the mainstream, you know, he was fighting and fighting and fighting. You always brought up a good point, Roberto. You say he's the one star that we've seen in the last 20 years that never took a break. They all took breaks from Floyd to Pacquiao.
Floyd.
Rather just through injuries or what have you, they all had breaks. You know, where Canelo, look, by the grace of God, he's never been really injured. We had to take all fights. He never did the whole fake retirement like so many others. You notice they don't do that no more. Remember when we kind of grew up, you know, started that, and Floyd and them and De La Hoya and all did it. But he never did the fake retirement. You know, he stayed the course. He moved up to 75, came back down to 68. You know, lost the ball and then came back down to 68 again and fought this guy, John Ryder, who he didn't look as great as in that. But look, I'll give him a mulligan, maybe fourth down to his competition. But I think for Mel, you got to test the water with that. Is it real? Is his legs going? And the only way you're going to find out if a fighter's legs is going, you got to work him. And see, I look at it like this, right? When we say movement, I think movement can go a lot of different ways. I look at the Castaño fight, and he was able to push Castaño forward, laterally, and backwards. That's how you work legs out, not just going on a straight line off the back foot. You know, so I hope he's not training just like that, but the way Mel fight is, Mel got a very underrated jab, right? It's a touch range-finding jab that he used to set up power shots. And if he's able to effectively, you know, walk Canelo backwards, because that's the key word in this fight, too, is that can he walk Canelo backwards? Because Canelo's not the same guy going backwards as he is forward. These are facts. Good as he is, good as he's become, working on getting better, he's still flawed in that regard, where he's very limited when you got to make him go backwards, or you got to, if you can work him laterally. He's not, right. It's not the same guy, you know. And it don't have to be a dominant lateral performance. It's just subtle shift movements with footwork where, you know, he's constantly coming forward, Charlo, I'm not making him out to be James Toney. Look, Charlo's going to get touched in this fight. I think both guys are. But, you know, the key question is, A, like you say, can he keep Canelo up off? Because Canelo's going to press him. You know, that's going to be his game plan. I'm going to break him down systematically, walk him down, and hopefully the break his will because he's a smaller weight. And that's another thing weight-wise, right? I want people to understand something. Just because Charlo's bigger than him doesn't mean he's bigger than him. In civilian street clothes, Charlo's the bigger guy. But in the boxing ring, his body is trained and conditioned to fight at certain weight classes. Canelo's been fighting at 168, you know, for quite some time now. So his body is conditioned to take that type of punishment from bigger guys. Jermell hasn't been hit by a 68-pounder yet. You know, we'll learn on next Saturday, if he can, you know, how much he can absorb to that. But like I said, the key is can you slow it down? You know, it's going to be some tie-ups in here. You know, I'm sure they worked on some clinches because you're going to have to tie Canelo up. Like, you know, we saw in the Bivol fight, you know, Bivol was tying him up, you know, in the first. Like, you got to tie Canelo because this stuff tires guys out. And the question is how much is Canelo legs? Is that a real thing? Is he an older guy that's past his prime? And can Jermell exploit that? You know, so, you know, it's just a couple questions out there that we need answers to. We'll know, I think, very early on, I think, kind of how this fight going to play out. You know, if Canelo is able to cut the ring off and Jermell constantly back footing on the line, then, you know, we're going to have some problems. Jermell's going to have some problems late in that fight. Now, if he's dictating the pace, got him backing up. If it go like in spurts, he's backing up, but he's backing Canelo up. Things make it interesting.
Yeah, I actually think he's... I mean, well, really, one thing, I don't think he should put on that much weight. I think he should kind of stay... Yeah. Yeah, I think he should stay at the closest possible weight that he somewhat fights at. You know, if he makes 154 and he's coming in like maybe 165 or 6.
Yeah.
Fight at your optimal weight where you're going to be comfortable at, and let alone if you're not having to cut that much weight. I just think he has, yeah, like you made a lot of points. I mean, and we've seen... Like, there's really, to be honest with you, there's more than one way to beat Canelo Alvarez. You know, we've seen different styles.
Different ways to do it. Yeah.
Have their way with him, and so to speak, you know. Now, does Jermell possess, you mentioned the jab. I mean, I think that's key. One thing Mel has that I don't think Canelo has seen in some time is speed.
Yeah.
You know, It's something where you know there's times where Mel can be a sneaky counterpuncher. He could be a little bit of a sharpshooter at times. And even though there's times in the past where he kind of gets reckless, can't do that against Canelo Alvarez, who, mind you, he sets traps, you know, and he'll bait, you know. So Mel, he's got to be really careful for that, but. He's just, I just think with Mel, you know, he's in one of those positions, man, where he's got nothing to lose. You know, he's being given this big opportunity. And it might, again, if this were Canelo from 160, I don't give Mel maybe somewhat of the chance I'd do in this fight, only because of the intangibles that I think are kind of there. Okay, like, we can look at the Bivol fight. And then there's the Triple G fight where he didn't look that great either.
Right.
The John Ryder fight.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess my question is kind of like, are those trends for real? Or was he really harboring a hand injury and then we're going to see the Canelo of old?
So wait, when you say this hand injury, I saw a little bit of it. Some people talking about it online. So is he saying that this went back to the Bivol fight? This hand injury?
All I'm hearing about is the John Ryder fight, but I did hear something about like he hasn't been 100%. And but again, we've been down this road before, you know, like because we've seen other fighters harbor injuries, but
They all hurt.
Listen, man, Floyd fought with brittle hands for like damn near half his career.
Yeah, Ward. Remember that? Remember
Ward? Ward, yeah. So bad I don't know, man. We bring up the point that you brought it up again with Canelo's. He's 33, but he's got a lot of mileage. You know, at some point or another, that is going to come to the table a lot more clear than maybe what is on the table right now. Now, can this fight, and this is where I'm like kind of stuck, where how I view this fight happening. Because, I mean, for the record, I got Canelo winning this fight, but I'm not sure yet if it's going to be a situation where we go in and it's, Canelo's got this big advantage and then the end of the fight comes around and we're like, whoa. So I'm hoping obviously we get that kind of fight, but there's just a lot of intangibles really for both going in that it's tough for me. Like, again, I'm picking Canelo, but I'm not writing Mel off. Like, if that makes any sense.
You know, it's funny, right? There's some contradictories going on here because, like, Canelo said that, oh, well, what would I get out of fighting? At first, he said this about Bud.
He's I know where you're going. Guy,
but you fighting a smaller guy. No matter which one he picked, it was a handicap situation. Jermell ain't fighting in 2 years. Jermell is fighting at 154, and he moved up. Look, people could say, well, it's two or not. Look, 2, 3, 4. He's still moving up.
Still, yeah.
Multiple weight classes.
Right, both of them.
So if it's Bud that, so, but I just thought that was interesting. But anyway, so this is the one thing about this fight that makes this interesting. Like you said, Jermell's playing with house money, bro. Like, he has nothing to lose out of this. He is a built-in.
Not at all.
When you're going into a fight with a built-in excuse, you have nothing to lose, right? So where Canelo, on the other hand, there's a huge risk factor here because two things. If he wins, most people will say, well, you know what? You're supposed to be. I'm a smaller guy. Go fight somebody your own size. Go fight Benavidez, right? But if he loses, let me set the table, what I wanted to say. This is a kind of a legacy fight on the way out the door for Canelo, where if he loses, and especially, it depends on how he loses, right? But if it's a situation where it's like a De La Hoya and Pacquiao where Charlo just beat him, now's a good point you brought up about being first. And I'll add to that, I think Charlo got to be first and last. You know, because punching in between punches is dangerous when you fight Canelo because he's a great counterpuncher. But if you able to beat him two punches, and all right, if you get a shot off here and there and you punctuated with your last shot, then I think that's another way that, you know, Charlo has some success. But if it's a situation where Charlo, like, outclasses him, oh boy. And you know how it worked, Roberto. Fair, unfair. And Charlo, Crawford team came out and said the same thing. Like, look, when you kind of peel back the onion, shout out to RLD, that's his famous go-to line. When you peel back the onion, and with Canelo's career, when he's been in these big spots and big moments, we always scratching our hair the next morning. So he has to have a solid performance. I agree.
He has to have a solid performance. We brought up that point. Right. We brought up that point. Like, when you think about, like, the big names he's fought. Again, maybe outside of, like, an old... All right, let me... Your contemporaries, right? Now, whatever you consider Triple G at 36 years old, I mean... I agree. Like, there's always been kind of... He's had a lot of question mark fights, you know? And
he's big
it's fun. Why I pose the question. Mel can be potentially... based on his circumstances, and again, man, he's got way more to gain than he does to lose.
Nothing loses.
Which doesn't mean he should not fight a smart fight, but...
You know, we're saying, like, he can always be like, I can't make this weight, I'm going back to where I came from.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
No, so, no, man. I just think that, like, for me, it's a matter of, you know, how much can Jermell impose to keep Canelo off of him? And like I said, is, you know, make an old man work. You know, use his legs with constant motion and movement and hand speed, you know, skills in there as well. But, you know, Canelo ain't see this in a minute. This, you know, this combination of a fighter.
I think one of the strategies really should be to attack Canelo's body. I mean, I think that's which, one area that I'm nobody glad goes you to.
That up. Mel is a really, really good body puncher. The Tony Harrison fight, even in the Castaño fight, the Tony Harrison fight, and you know, me and you, we talked about this several off camera. Before the knockout happened, he catches Tony Harrison with a vicious body shot. And Tony Harrison low key didn't recover from that. He hit it fine, and the hand shot was just, you know, the icing on the cake. But
yeah,
the body shot is what slowed him down. Even the commentary, yeah, they missed it that night when they was covering that fight. But he go to the body really well. He mixes his blood. Jamel's a good fighter, man. That's why, like, you know, this is it. At first, when it first happened, I was like, oh, man, this is so BS. Like, you know, I just wasn't feeling it. But then as I, you know, as time went on, I started like processing everything in my mind. I'm like, you know what? This fight is actually going to be interesting, you know. You know, while it lasts, if it lasts, you know. But I just think that it's going to be some intriguing moments in this fight.
Yo, I have a strange feeling. This joint's going 12, man. I have a weird feeling.
Yeah, I think so. I think Mel got a chin. I don't think Canelo's stopping him. I think Mel's chin. Now, I think he got dropped early in his career, if I'm not mistaken, but I think that guy's in tip-top shape. I don't think he's just going to be on a straight line to be had all night, you know. The only way I can see Mel getting stopped, and what we were saying is that, look, I'm doing everything I can, and I just can't keep this dude off me, and you constantly backpedaling it and get caught with something over the top from constant wear and tear, you know, so... That's the only way I can see him potentially getting stopped. But I just think that he's a rugged. I think Mel is rugged, man. I think that he's athletic. You know, he's got boxing abilities. And I just think, you know, if it needs to get rugged, he can get rugged in there too. And I just think that he's conditioned to deal with things that a lot of other guys wasn't conditioned. Even as a smaller guy moving up, I think he's going to be able to be conditioned to deal with some stuff that other guys wasn't.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because I think we're... What Mel brings to the table that I don't think Canelo's used to seeing really at this, you know, I mean, again, it's subjective with the weight because it's Mel moving up. But yeah, like when you take somebody like Triple G, who Canelo could see those punches come on a mile away. Yeah. Still got hit with them. But you can kind of see them. Where I think Mel has the opportunity where, you know, I don't think Canelo's going to sit there and want to try to test Mel's power, but I think Mel, like, to your point, he could set his punches up in a way where Canelo may not see those punches. And I think that's where he has to kind of make Canelo think twice. If these shots are coming in, particularly, like, in the exchange, and Canelo's like, whoa, because I think where Bivol had success was he was punching in the exchange, but for every two shots that Canelo landed, Bivol came back with, like, two or three. And Canelo didn't like that.
One thing
he got that, and he had him laying on the ropes after a while. That got him tired.
The one thing Bivol though consistently did out that fight was civilize him with a jab. That's why I'm saying, like, he don't like nothing in his face all pause, but he don't like nothing in his face all night. That's the one thing that gave him. If you go back to look at everybody that gave him problems, it's one consistent punch that gave him problems from all the way back to the Lara fight. And that was the one. Yep. Yeah, like it frustrates him, and what happens when he's civilized with a jab, he gets impatient and he resorts back to his old habit of following you around.
Right.
With no rhyme or reason. Let's not forget in the Caleb Plant fight, early on in that fight, he was, you know, now his goal in that fight was I'ma just deal with this until I can't deal with it no more. I'ma break Caleb down late. But again, like you said, Mel, I think condition-wise, is a little bit more well, and he's more seasoned. Like, that was Caleb Plant, and not to make excuses, but you know what I'm saying. Like, Mel have been in world,
right?
You have been around, you know.
Yeah, no, you're right. Experience takes you a long way, and yeah. Again, like even Mel moving up two weight classes, you could argue he's still the puncher over Caleb Plant.
Right.
Is it concerns
right.
like, you know what I'm saying? Like when you're a puncher. You, like almost every like look historically at every single puncher in boxing and that moved up in weight, they carried much of their punches of the weight classes, you know what I mean? There was a point where it was, but a puncher is a puncher, and I don't think Canelo can fight Caleb Plant, I mean can fight Mel in the same manner as Caleb Plant, who I don't think he ever worried about what was coming at him because he was fighting at like in a defensive stance, like practically on the back foot the whole night.
Let
this
me
is
say
your point,
real quick, before we close out. If Mel wins this fight, this is going to change modern day boxing, and I'm gonna say that. I'm gonna say that because it's gonna open eyes up for other fighters, like, And this goes for the Inouyes of the world, the Gervonta. Well, Gervonta kind of. Well, that's a whole other story, Gervonta. But for all other guys, you know what I'm saying? But I think it's going to change this version of we've seen this before. So for us, this is just, you know, this is how it's always been. But I think it's going to open guys' eyes up like, well, damn, I got the skill set. I'm technically, you know, a bigger dude. Like, let me try my hand with some stuff. Like, let me move up some, you know, a weight class or two and try my hand, you know? So I do think that if he wins, it's going to change something. Now, here's before we wrap up, too. What we didn't factor in is that what if this fight is like kind of close where they got to run it back and do a rematch? I forgot about
which
that.
Which is probably what they would what they would do. You know, it's now I'll tell you, and I think all of us kind of would agree with this that there's probably going to be one particular person in the crowd in Vegas that night. You know, maybe rocking a tank top or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I really feel Terrence Crawford is going to be at this fight.
You think he pulled up?
I think he pulls up. Yeah. I really think he pulls
inside
up.
Inside the ring?
I'm to make more of the case.
Inside the ring? Or you think he just...
But that's what I'm saying. Like, depends. We came from the era, not even that far removed. Remember when Shane went in against Floyd?
Yeah.
And that all started and B-Hop was in his face. You need to take this fight. We need that, man. Like, it ain't like Crawford's gonna go in there and swing at Canelo. That's not the case, but this is the part of boxing that gets missed sometimes, where the marketing side of it,
a lot
of it back then, man, these fighters were like this, like, come on, let's fight. It set the tone.
I think Bud is low key rooting, and as he should, because Canelo's the bigger fight. I think he low key pulling for Canelo, and from a legacy standpoint. Like, it's like, don't get me wrong, if he was to fight Mel, it'd be a great fight, and don't get me wrong, but you know what I'm saying, like, top pound for pound guy, you know, in the last X amount of years, moving up a weight, it's a lot more sexier to beat Canelo than it is Jermell, given the circumstances of the situation.
Canelo versus Terrence Crawford would be the biggest pay-per-view Pacquiao Mayweather.
Yeah,
as it concerns boxing.
I agree. And that's what I was trying to explain to somebody earlier. He's like, well, it's a Mexican versus Mexican. I say, Benavidez, don't get me wrong. He's not there yet. It's still got to be, it's just not about, a Mexican fighter. And before somebody bring up Ryan Garcia has 15 million followers on Instagram. He's in Milan right now modeling.
He's in Europe right now,
man. Yeah. He's somewhere, you know, so. It's not and look, Benavidez, I do think is the next, he will be the next big pay-per-view star, you know, at some point. But I just think, given the momentum, because that's the key word here, momentum of Bud Crawford, look, the guy was on Good Morning America for crying out loud. He's made every media run that you could think of, and he's hot. He's a hot commodity. That's why do you think Canelo changes his tune? See what
you see?
He like, oh, shoot, well. Maybe we kind of misjudged his net worth. So, you know, but first thing first, let's get this over with. And,
yeah,
you know, we'll go from there. So,
Yeah. But that's pretty much it, man. Follow us, as we always say, Instagram at Guardian Grove Boxing.
Hold on real quick, right? This poster, right? It says live on closed circuit TV. No radio and no home TV. That's crazy, right?
You had to be out to watch it.
You haven't, that's only, I remember my pop was like, I forget what fight it was. One of the fights. Matter of fact, it was the Aaron Pryor and Alexa Arroyo fight. And he was saying that he had to go through so much. He had to ride somewhere way out, like Bethlehem, PA, to go watch this fight on a cold circuit. Because it was sold out.
And then at the legendary Orange Bowl, rest in peace.
Right, it was there. But just think though, bro, back then, you couldn't find it at the crib. You had to go somewhere. He said the fight was so popular today. They were sold out. He had to go ride. Wait, it wasn't no Google. And I'm like, damn, well, how did y'all know what, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, like
this word of mouth. They would be like, oh, the such and such is playing it at the Armory way there, you know. Crazy, bro.
These kids today got it good, man. Like, I saw Leonard Hagler close circuit on a Monday night. Like, I went with my uncle and my dad, and like, we just saw it, man. Like, yeah. So it's like
different day and time, bro.
Absolutely, man. So, like all we right, said, at Guardian Grove Boxing on Instagram, facebook.com/GYG Boxing. Appreciate all the follows. Comment, let us know who you got winning this fight, man. Canelo, Jermell, Charlo. Yes. So we are out till next time. Peace.